Today, playing the inflation game. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Well, the news continues to confuse as Wall Street contended with another volatile session. Investors mulled the Federal Reserve's path of interest rate hikes while also assessing mixed economic data and a slew of earnings reports. While the ECB doubled official deposit rates and Credit Suisse revealed their plans to revamp their business. All, of course, in the context of raging inflation. At the end of the day, the Dow closed higher on Thursday as a rally in Caterpillar and Boeing cushioned the rout in tech after Meta delivered disappointing quarterly results. In fact, the Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 0.61%, but the Nasdaq was down 1.6% and the S&P 500 fell 0.55%. In fact, the S&P 500 closed lower after swinging between gains and losses for most of the session. The big news was Meta Platforms, which fell nearly 25% after reporting third quarter results that missed on the bottom line and were, quote, an absolute train wreck, according to Wedbush. The result reflects the pervasive digital advertising doldrums ahead for Zuckerberg & Co. as they make the risky and head-scratching bet on the metaverse, it added. And in fact, that was Meta Platforms' worst one-day drop since February. Meta results arrived just a day after Alphabet and Microsoft reported underwhelming quarterly results as well. After the close, Apple reported revenue and profit that topped Wall Street targets, one of the few bright spots in a tech sector, battered by spending cutbacks due to inflation. The forecast for holiday quarter, though, was more grim. While not providing specific numbers, Apple said revenue would de-accelerate in the December quarter. In fact, Apple was saved by its oldest technology, its laptop computers, while its star, the iPhone, stumbled. Apple shares fell 2% in after-hours trade. And Amazon, who also reported late on Thursday, forecast a slowdown in sales for the holiday season, disappointing Wall Street and warning that inflation-wary consumers and businesses had less money to spend. For months, the world's biggest online retailer has fought against troubling macroeconomic tides. In fact, it hosted not one, but two cornerstone sales events in the year, Prime Day in July and the Prime Early Access Sale this month. And for the summer event, it sold more items than ever before to its Prime loyalty shoppers. And meanwhile, the company also sought revenue from higher Prime subscription fees and a surcharge on some merchants. But the macro outlook was not brightened. In a call with reporters, the chief financial officer said the company was bracing for slower economic growth. We are seeing signs all around that, again, people's budgets are tight, inflation is still high, energy costs are an additional layer on top of that caused by other issues, he said. We're preparing for what could be a slower growth period, like most companies. And as a result, Amazon's shares dropped 14% in extended trading, and that erased about $140 billion of its market capitalization, which, by the way, would be greater than the entire value of companies such as Morgan Stanley, Netflix, or even Lockheed Martin. Caterpillar, however, provided plenty of optimism for investors after reporting better-than-expected quarterly sales as price hikes and higher sales volumes bolstered the heavy equipment company's growth. Honeywell International was another industrial heavyweight that delivered a beat on the bottom line, sending its shares more than 3% higher, and Boeing gained 4.5%, recovering some losses from a day earlier when the aircraft maker reported a bigger-than-expected loss. McDonald's Corporation, a major Dow component, was up about 3%, which was underpinned by better-than-expected quarterly results amid rising customer traffic. And energy stocks were driven 1% higher or so by rising oil prices, with Marathon Oil, Baker Hughes, and Valero Energy leading the upside. However, Treasury yields continue to retreat from recent highs, with the 10-year Treasury yield slipping below 4% as investors continue to bet that the Fed is closing in on a peak level and rate hikes. Over the last six hiking cycles, bond yields have typically peaked a couple of months before the peak in the Fed fund rate itself, Oxford Economics said in the recent note. But on the economic front, meanwhile, the US economy rebounded in the third quarter, growing at a 2.6% annualized rate, according to just preliminary estimates from the Commerce Department. Resilient consumers and businesses are largely behind the latest jump, with personal consumption the largest contributor to the economy, increasing at a 1.4% pace, which was better than forecast, but also a slowdown from the prior quarter. Although economic activity is usually a good sign, some market watchers are worried that the continued strength means the Federal Reserve will have to keep hiking rates for longer to get inflation under control, which could ultimately lead to a slowdown. Also note, it was driven by a jump in exports, and this is unlikely to persist given the stronger dollar. So the report showed that the US economy rebounded after two quarterly contractions, which briefly suggested an imminent recession, but it also highlighted that consumer spending remains under pressure because of inflation. The dollar snapped a two-day drop. With the Fed hiking interest rates aggressively, RBC expects GDP growth to slow in the fourth quarter and a recession for the next year. We are therefore nearly at a peak in yields, which we expect to be around 4% at the end of the year, they said. But it's worth noting the stocks and currency markets digested the GDP data differently because it's difficult to tell what the Fed is planning to do next, said Fiona Cincotta, senior financial markets analyst at Citi Index. The US dollar is reading into this that perhaps it's going to keep the Fed on that hawkish path for longer, whereas the stock market seems to be reading it completely differently, almost as if it's expecting the Fed to be sort of moving towards less hawkish stuff. Economists do still expect the Fed to hike by 0.75 percentage point for the fourth time in a row when it meets next week, but with recent data highlighting the effects of the Fed's sharp rate hikes on the economy, investors expect the central bank to slow its pace of tightening after November's meeting. It's not about a pivot and cutting interest rates, Alec Young, chief investment strategist MAP Signals, said in an interview. It's just about the Fed becoming more data dependent and acknowledging there's already a lot of tightening in the pipeline from all the rate hikes they've put through so far. But does it mean the US avoided a recession then? Well, that's the question, of course, everyone's asking after gross domestic product rose to that 2.6% annualized rate in the third quarter. The uptick follows two consecutive quarters of contraction, which some define as a recession. It's all contributing to a very strange economic situation. Consumer prices are still rising, household spending is coming under pressure, and surging mortgage rates are starting to cool the housing market, even as unemployment sits at a five-decade low. But meanwhile, major companies are sending conflicting earnings messages, leaving the stock market confused. No wonder people are interpreting Thursday's data in different ways, with President Joe Biden, for example, saying it shows the economy is continuing to power forward, while economists at Morgan Stanley said the third quarter is likely to mark a peak in growth. Meanwhile, McDonald's chief executive officer said on Thursday he expects a mild to moderate recession. It's nice to see a positive GDP number, but I don't think we're in the clear yet, economically speaking, said Brittany Birkhoff, financial advisor at Hilltop Wealth Advisors. With inflation still high, the Fed is still positioned to keep raising interest rates, and it's likely we'll see economic growth continue to slow as a side effect from that. Although some define a recession as two consecutive quarters of declining GDP, which happened earlier this year, the National Bureau of Economic Research technically declares recessions in the US. It usually takes them about a year to make such a call. The definition of recession is, quote, a significant decline in economic activity that is spread across the economy and that lasts for more than a few months, according to the NBER. The definition is subjective, and there is no fixed rule in determining a significant decline, said David Hubner, financial advisor at Hubner Financial Planning. A 1.6 decline in the first quarter of 2022, followed by a 0.6% decline in the second quarter, is not a significant decline. It's arguably flat. Recently, Goldman Sachs' David Solomon said economic conditions are going to tighten meaningfully from here, while Frank Pittigas, head of international operations at Morgan Stanley, said 2023 looks a little dicey. I think a recession still hasn't started yet, but it's highly likely a recession will probably come in 2023, said Chris Diodato, founder of Wealth Financial Planning. The strong GDP figure for the third quarter means the Fed might need to continue tightening aggressively, according to Chris Zaccarelli, chief investment officer at Independent Advisor Alliance. The Fed really has their work cut out for them. The economy isn't slowing, consumers are still spending a lot, and inflation isn't going to drop back down to 2% anytime soon, he said. For its meeting next week, the central bank is expected to raise its benchmark rate by 75 basis points for the fourth straight meeting. And investors are predicting they'll hike by 50 or 75 basis points in December and then end the tightening in early 2023 around 4.9%. But the Fed could change course if economic data remains strong, said Elena Fish, founder of Contessa Capital Advisors in New York. The Fed has seemed determined to encourage a recession until inflation is clearly under control, she said. Now, over in Europe, the European Central Bank delivered its expected 75 basis point increase in its official deposit rate on Thursday, taking it to 1.5%. But the decision came with a dovish tilt that acknowledges the deteriorating economic outlook, as well as an attempt to stop banks from profiting from the swift change in the monetary stance seen in recent months. More than ever, policymakers find themselves fighting on several fronts at once. But ECB officials weren't unanimous about the size of the interest rate hike and sought to avoid giving a specific signal on the next move in December. President Christine Lagarde emphasized that the economic slowdown seen in the Eurozone third quarter will deepen into next year. While she said that several more hikes were possible to combat double-digit inflation, traders scaled back their expectation for December's move to just 50 basis points. Discussions about future ways to reduce the central bank's 5 trillion euro balance sheet will also take place that month. In other words, quantitative tightening isn't coming this year. Raising interest rates and stopping bond buying, though, are the easy bits, keeping money flowing freely through the plumbing, while tightening policy is much more complex. In fact, the ECB extended around 2 trillion euros of super cheap loans into the banking system over the course of the last decade, known as targeted longer-term refinancing operations. Some were offered at interest rates as low as minus 1% at the height of the pandemic. The original premise was to encourage increased bank lending to companies, particularly in peripheral countries. Large amounts, though, were invested in sovereign bonds, with Italian banks particularly active. But this much needed at the time generosity has fast become a sensitive political issue. Put simply, banks can take the free money and deposit it back at the central bank at the new high interest rates. So the TLTRO terms are being tightened, with the ECB seeming determined to wind down the program as soon as possible. Banks are being given 3 windows when they can repay the loans early. And to incentivize them, interest charges on all outstanding loans will increase to the current deposit rate of 1.5% starting on November 23rd. On average, that is an increase in funding costs of between 200 to 250 basis points. As the deposit rate will likely increase further to 2% at the December meeting, it will encourage virtually all banks to exit the program by the end of the year. Only banks who can't fund at attractive terms and need the longer-term lending will likely remain holding those loans. Taking away liquidity is always, though, fraught with risk, as pulling one end of a string can unravel unexpected things. Banks might respond by restricting the credit available to companies and households, further depressing growth, or they might unwind their holdings of government bonds at the same time as the ECB is looking to reduce its debt pile. If the central bank has miscalibrated, the law of unintended consequences could kick in hard. Financial conditions are tightening rapidly as it is, with the deposit rate soaring from minus 50 basis points just 3 months ago. The other risk of withdrawing liquidity is creating a collateral squeeze in the bond market, as was suffered by UK gilts recently. In a positive rate environment, the ECB deposit rate is meant to be the floor of the monetary framework, but market rates can sometimes edge below the official rate if financial institutions are desperately seeking high-quality collateral and offer more attractive funding costs to secure prized assets. Lagarde said the central bank is well aware of this danger, noting that it can become even more of an issue at year-end. And she also said that the change in the TLTRO term should increase the pool of collateral going forward. We have made progress on the normalisation path, but we still have ground to cover, Lagarde said. The ECB has been later to the rate-rising party than its peers at the Federal Reserve or the Bank of England, but by focusing on borrowing costs rather than the balance sheet, it's given itself some much-needed breathing space to accommodate a slump in growth, if that's what transpires this winter. And the European Central Bank isn't currently planning to announce a start date for the reduction of its asset portfolio when it agrees on a broad strategy in December. And following Thursday's policy meeting, President Lagarde said the Governing Council decided it would pursue a discussion in December around how to reduce bond holdings acquired under the regular quantitative easing programme and decide the key principles. Even so, avoiding an immediate decision on so-called quantitative tightening, just as officials plan their final interest rate hike of the year, would also be consistent with their preference to relegate to the background the unwinding of their portfolio. The euro slid and bonds rallied as traders paired bets on future interest rate increases after the European Central Bank struck that more dovish tone. The common currency fell as much as 1.1%, diving back below parity against the dollar, and Italian debt led gains as the ECB president drove home a gloomy economic prognosis in the press conference following the decision. While the ECB expects to raise borrowing costs further, it dropped the words over the next several meetings from its statement, adding that substantial progress has been made in withdrawing stimulus. That led money markets to cut rate hike wages, betting that rates will peak at 2.65% next year, compared to almost 3% before the announcement. Lagarde is essentially acknowledging that stagflation risks are on the rise for the euro area, said Lars Merklin, a currency analyst at Danske Bank. In this environment, euro-dollar will likely weaken further. Lagarde's comments fed into a wider debate over whether central banks across the world will cave to recessionary pressures plaguing their economies and temper their tightening efforts. And she warned that global activity is continuing to slow and a massive terms of trade shock is weighing on incomes in the euro area. The doves today have won some flexibility in forward guidance, said Nomura Holdings. It's not just an inflation story anymore. Combine this with the Bank of Canada yesterday, and it's looking more and more like a global central bank pivot. Depends, of course, how you define pivot. The Bank of Canada hiked rates by 50 basis points on Wednesday, as I discussed, a smaller than expected move. And money markets now expect an ECB hike of around that size at its next meeting in December. That prospect swung euro area bonds to gains across the board. German two-year notes, among the most sensitive interest rate changes, led the rally, sending the yield 17 basis points lower to 1.77%, and the 10-year yield fell below 2% for the first time in about 3 weeks. With a big chunk of eurozone already tipping into recession, I get the sense that markets aren't convinced the ECB will hike aggressively, said Win Thin, the global head of currency strategy at Brown Brothers Harriman. After the ECB's December meet, the outlook for hikes gets, quote, murky. While its US and UK counterparts are acting to reduce the size of the balance sheet, the ECB is taking a different route and shunning the quantitative tightening path, said Jeremy Badstone Carr, European strategist at Raymond James. A bigger priority for the ECB will be the trend in bond yield spreads between the peripheral and core member states. Now, as a result of all that, the Stocks Europe 600 closed little changed in London. Rate-sensitive technology shares trimmed declines after the decision, while real estate, utilities and banks outperformed. The ECB's less hawkish tone led money markets to cut rate hike wages by nearly 30 basis points, pricing a peak of 2.65% next year compared to that 3%. And among individual movers, Credit Suisse Group tumbled 19%. The most on record, as it reported its fourth straight loss and unveiled a strategic plan that will see the bank undertake a multi-billion dollar capital raise. Credit Suisse Group's top two leaders described their plan to remake the troubled bank as, quote, radical and decisive, promising an end to half measures. The multi-year reshaping, funded by a new Saudi Arabian backer, marked a historic move away from going toe-to-toe with the biggest Wall Street players and an unprecedented attempt to spin out a boutique investment bank. And yet many analysts and investors expressed concerns that some of the most decisive elements won't be determined for a while, and a few even questioned whether the moves were extreme enough. We had hoped for a more radical retrenchment, said Stefan Stahlmann, an analyst with Autonomous Research. JP Morgan echoed that sentiment, saying, "We are hoping for more shrinkage in the investment bank," and called the plan more complicated than resets at Deutsche Bank and UBS. Amid stock dilution from the upcoming share sale and the prospect of just nominal dividends until 2025, the shares tumbled 19%, the biggest single-day decline on record. The need for something dramatic can be seen in the scale of the bank's fall. A $4 billion third-quarter hit ensured that Credit Suisse's loss this year will wipe out the profit it made over the past decade. The firm's market value dipped below $10 billion this month from $50 billion less than 5 years ago. That's prompted the embattled lender to refocus on wealth management and bread-and-butter Swiss banking. The complex restructuring, led by Chief Executive Ulrich Koller and Chairman Axel Lehmann, involves raising 4 billion francs, which is $4.1 billion, in a capital increase backed by Saudi National Bank, slashing the workforce by 17% and breaking up its investment banking unit. But the costs are high, and the once venerable firm is asking shareholders to wait a long time for a limited return. The capital increase, equivalent to one-third of Credit Suisse's market value, is an indication of the level of desperation. Bank executives had wanted to avoid selling equity, given the shares were trading near record lows, but outflows from wealth management clients forced their hand. Analysts expressed disappointment over the modest goal of raising the group's return on tangible equity to 6% in 2025, with Citigroup's Andrew Coombs calling it lowly. The figure is less than Deutsche Bank's target for this year, which started a strikingly similar restructuring effort in 2019. Credit Suisse dipped into the past for its turnaround, in fact, by reviving the First Boston name, which was ditched in 2005 after falling into ill repute following scandals and declining profitability. The investment bank will become a separate unit based on a partnership model. That's a throwback to a Wall Street era when key employees were granted a level of ownership. The entity, dubbed CS First Boston, along with selling the majority of assets to its securitized products group to Apollo Global Management and Pacific Investment Management, are part of an effort to slim down the investment bank. The firm wants to reduce risk-weighted assets by 40%. Stahlmann of Autonomous Research said he was looking for a cut of about 75%. And CS First Boston will be led by Michael Klein, a veteran ex-Citigroup dealmaker, and will include the bank's historically strong advisory and leveraged finance unit. But the ownership structure remains murky, meaning Credit Suisse could one day be asked to bail out the unit like it did back in 1990. Kroner said that once the unit is a separate legal entity, the bank could reduce its stake but retain majority ownership, and over time could even cut that to a minority holding or IPO the business. Credit Suisse already has a $500 million commitment from an undisclosed anchor investment for the CS First Boston unit. It is not yet clear where we're going to end up, obviously because we are at the very beginning of that journey, Kroner told analysts. The pivot marks a major step back for Credit Suisse, which not long ago was in the inner circle of global trading giants. In the 5 years ended in 2014, Credit Suisse generated more than $50 billion of trading revenue, topping Morgan Stanley in that period. But over the past decade, Wall Street firms have continuously gained ground and several European banks have scaled back in the most capital-heavy businesses. Deutsche Bank got out of equity trading, and UBS's investment bank cut assets more than 80% from the pre-crisis peak. Credit Suisse had already chipped away at the size of its markets business through a series of moves. In the 5 years ended in June, its trading haul was about $30 billion, less than half of Morgan Stanley's $80 billion. Third quarter earnings provided a bitter backdrop for the announcement, revenue dropped across the investment banking division, the only major Wall Street bank to do so, while wealth management clients yanked funds. The operational issues added to outstanding questions about the overhaul, prompting some analysts to recommend steering clear of the Swiss firm. The latest quarterly figures show deterioration in momentum that we find concerning, though not very surprising, Flora Bohart, an analyst with Jefferies Financial Group, said in the note, given the significant uncertainty and execution risk, we continue to see better risk and reward elsewhere. The coming months will remain bumpy. Credit Suisse forecasts another loss in the fourth quarter and indicated next year would be tough before turning profitable in the nether regions of 2024. So you can see once again the twists and turns in the markets and the uncertainty being created by central banks' policy to chase down inflation or not. And the markets, of course, continue to keep hoping that the Fed will pivot and other central banks will do the same. And yet inflation continues to burn bright. And if you look at the US, the momentum in the economy there looks stronger than probably the Federal Reserve would want to see. So to my mind, we've still got a long ways to go before we start seeing the Fed stop its hikes. And then, of course, we're still in the high territory. Don't expect rate cuts for probably the next year or two, especially if we don't see a recession. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.